Remember how to do this. All right. Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the North Gateway Redevelopment Advisory Board meeting. The time is 8:05 a.m. on August 1st, 2019. Ask the recorder to call the roll, please.
Jason Cox?
Here.
Mike Alley?
Here.
Barb Rush is excused. Brittany Davidson?
Here.
Nate Levinson is absent. Jared Martin?
Here.
Pedro Loyola is absent. Frank Pack?
Here.
Mike White?
Here.
Mark Adams, absent. And Dania Ballard, absent.
Thank you very much. Would anyone like to make a motion to approve our agenda from August 1st? Let's go ahead and maybe do a motion for the minutes, too. I'll make that motion.
I'll second it.
All right, so we have a motion and a second to approve the agenda for August 1st, as well as your minutes from June 6th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thanks much. Public comment. Appearance of any persons wishing to address the board on any matter other than those appearing on this agenda. I see a couple people in the room. I don't see any sign up. Do we have anyone who wishes to speak? And so we will move past that portion of the day and say hello to Mr. Nate. Walked in at 8:06 a.m.
Good morning.
You're precisely 1 minute late. How you doing? So, with no action items appearing on our agenda, we're going to move to 6A, Fisher Road Affordable Housing Project Update with Salem Housing Authority.
Okay, so I will do a quick little introduction. Some of you were on the board in November of 2017. Some of you are not on the board back then. So just as a quick kind of background. The Salem Housing Authority came to the Urban Renewal Agency with respect to a parcel that had become available right outside the boundaries of the North Gateway Urban Renewal Area. It was basically built by a gentleman who was going to house his entire family there, some of you might remember. And it was identified as a great source to actually do affordable housing. What we ended up doing is we extended the boundaries of the Urban Renewal Area to bring this parcel in, and then we, the Urban Renewal Agency, provided funding to help purchase the parcel. And so now that that's been closed, Salem Housing Authority owns the property, they're starting to do the project, we wanted to have Jessica come in and just kind of give an update as to what's going on, what you might be seeing out there, since it is something that kind of we made some changes in order to be able to assist them. So I will hand it over to Jessica.
Thank you, Sarah. Pleasure to be here this morning. Thank you for having me. A couple of updates that I can provide for you all is Fisher Road, well, formerly known as Fisher Road, is now officially called Redwood Crossings. And we have developed our construction plans to construct 37 units of affordable housing, which will serve the chronically homeless population of the Salem area. Six of those units will be designated as medical respite units, which will be managed by the Salem Hospital. Currently, folks that are being treated in the Salem Hospital for, you know, minor things or some major things, a lot of times the hospital doesn't have room to house them while they're recovering. And they would then put them on a taxi and send them to a shelter, or put them in a taxi and send them to a hotel for a couple nights. So instead of that, the Salem Hospital will have six beds in our community, which will allow them to come in and be able to recover in a safe environment. And that will be six units that will be specifically for that. There'll be 30 SRO units, which is basically a room and a shared bathroom. And there'll be one-bedroom apartment. So 37 total with community space, space also for meetings and some of our partner agencies like Northwest Human Services and Arches to come in and assist these folks with any type of service-related activity. And it'll be a permanent supportive housing community, the first in Salem of its kind. And we're excited because we're just to the very end of getting all of our construction costs in. It does appear that with the rising cost of construction that we'll be just slightly under and have a gap between $200,000 and $300,000, and so potentially we'll be looking at asking for some additional grant funding from the Urban Renewal Agency so that we can get the project into construction this fall and have the units available this winter for our homeless community. So at this time, we're hoping next week to have the final cost estimates in, and we'll be able to come with any, if needed, ask to the Urban Renewal Agency, and then hopefully get under construction here in September.
Can you put me in? Oh, sorry. Where exactly, north or south of Silverton Road?
So it's between Silverton and Ward on Fisher Road, and it's really interesting because the address is actually 4107 Fisher Road, but it's actually a side road off the main Fisher Road, so it's very easy to miss. It's closer to Ward Drive, I would say, than Silverton. So you have the big crossroads, hotel-looking thing, and then you go down about a half a mile on the left, and there's this just this little tiny little side road, and the building is located there. And as she stated, it was built to be like a residential care facility for the gentleman's aging family, and it was 80% constructed when he backed out of it. And then the Urban Renewal Agency came in and assisted in acquiring it with the thought that Salem Housing Authority would come in and basically transition it into affordable housing.
What's the total project cost?
The total project cost right now, I believe, our construction to be about, with acquisition, about 3.7.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. What does that break down to per unit?
I would have to get a calculator.
$100,000.
I think I need her. He'll just do it.
There we go. Yes. Yes. So,
is that good?
Well, so one of the things is we are a public agency, and so because of the having the transitional units on the first floor, it is subject to fully the prevailing wages, and so our construction costs are much higher than what they would be in like a non-mixed use project or solely residential or something like that. But this particular project, if you've never toured it, I would definitely encourage engaging the agency so you can see what's going on, because it's it can't really be a multi-family building. It was built already to be more of a residential care, so it didn't really fit that mold with the city of Salem. So
100,000 a unit, and we're using the existing structure.
Yes.
So this wasn't a teardown starter.
It's about 80% done. Now, all the things don't quite meet the code requirements for what we're doing. So there's a lot of updates to the fire systems. Mm-hmm. So full building HVAC. Unfortunately, the way it was constructed, not all of the doors were fire rated where they should be. So a lot of those really big, the elevator doesn't exist. There's only a partial shaft. So we're kind of left with those real big ticket items left.
All right.
How many agencies invested in this?
So we have the Urban Renewal Agency, and we have Salem Housing Authority, and then this has Oregon Housing and Community Service Lift funding in it, which is the kind of the new thing that they're pushing. Lift is low income fast track, I think they call it. Housing, which is grant funding through.
With SROs, how many, I understand that there's a shared bath between every two units. Does each of the units have a little efficiency kitchen?
Thank you for asking. Yes, that's a great question. Every unit, so every room is approximately between 300 and 500 square feet, so very spacious. I'm used to and it comes with a full closet summer walk-in, and then also a kitchenette, which will include a small fridge, a sink, and we're going to be putting in kind of special plates, not full ovens, but kind of special plates that are fire resistant, that don't get hot, there, and then maybe teach them how to use the convection ovens rather than a real oven. So we have a community kitchen on the first floor, which we're not using as a commercial kitchen. It's not going to be used to serve meals to the community. It'll be independent living, essentially, but an ability to bring the residents down and teach them how to cook and use certain equipment. And then once they kind of graduate through some of those, they'll be able to have more appliances in there.
So I'm sorry, I was late, so I'm not sure which agency you're coming from.
Salem Housing Authority.
Salem Housing Authority. Has there, from the connection with the mental health services and such, has there been any discussion with SAMHSA or any of the other federal money sources that support Housing First type options and such?
Well, I think the Housing First is fairly new to Oregon. I know that there are some projects in Portland right now that really are starting to adopt that Housing First model. And so this is a Housing First model, the first one here in Salem. And so our other partner would be Oregon Health Authority, that I hadn't yet mentioned, that is has assisted us with funding with the idea that we set it up in that model. And so I don't know of any, there's no federal, we're using project-based vouchers, so that's really the only federal money that's going into the project. And what project-based vouchers are, they work very similar to the Section 8 vouchers, which are tenant-based, and they can kind of move around with the vouchers. These ones will be tied specifically to these units for 20 years. So they'll be serving clients that are extremely low-income for that 20-year period, which will be basically 30% of their income. So if they come in with no income, they'd be $0. And the supportive services with that Housing First model, our partners here locally are Northwest Human Services, Salem Health, and Arches, and they're going to be assisting us with the residential services on site. And then Salem Housing Authority also has the homeless rental assistance program, which offers up, and some of these maybe are clients that live there, and so there'll be some of those folks in their case management on site daily as well. So did that answer your question?
Yes, you answered my question. My primary concern was the use of local dollars versus the leveraging on the federal resources that are available, because this is a national issue. I know some of the federal partners are looking at pilot options and looking at opportunities where they're trying to figure out what works in an urban environment versus a rural environment, and are trying to find new ideas that, to try to support and try to populate in the future. And SAMHSA, SMHSA, I believe is what it is, Mental Health Substance Abuse Partner, they're one of the ones that does have funding for and is looking for ideas to try to capitalize off of.
Well, we, in this particular project being so far into it, we haven't looked into any additional grant funding in hopes that we can, we've got some other things in the pipeline that we're looking to go after some of that state money that just came out for the permanent supportive housing. And that is currently open, I believe. So we've got some other projects that, yes, we are, but in this particular project, we have not. Okay.
So I want to build on that just a little bit, local dollars, and I'm basing this a little bit on what you see in the paper, which is always dangerous. I know that there was some cuts to the city budget in regards to support for housing. Is there extra ask related to that in any way?
No, this is specific to this project and trying to make sure that this project pencils, and we have very short timelines in order to acquire this grant funding. If we weren't able to obtain this money, it could potentially throw this project into another 6-month delay.
And are all the local dollars coming from this pot, or are there other local dollars coming in as well?
So there's the state dollars from the LIFT funding.
Right.
URA assisted us with the acquisition, so the purchase of the land, and that's the only other the acquisition part and the assistance of the purchasing the land is the only other bit of local dollars that are in it. The rest are state and federal.
Okay, I guess what I was driving at was that all of the local dollars come from this. There's nothing from like the general fund or Salem Housing or...
Salem Housing is actually...
Or is Salem Housing a pastor?
Yeah, Salem Housing is actually putting its own $770,000 into it.
Cool.
Yeah. So there's equity coming from the agency.
Yeah. And the reason I ask is I always just try to keep an eye on when urban renewal... It is very tempting to make urban renewal the grab pile, and I'm not saying that's what you guys are doing at all.
Yeah.
But the reason I ask is that that's something I want to keep an eye on, is that that urban renewal is on top, in terms of an investment in the local community, is on top of what is available versus in lieu of. And so I appreciate you making that distinction.
Yes, sorry.
No, nothing to be sorry about. I appreciate the... walking us through that.
Yeah.
And will project bring jobs to the area?
Beyond
construction. I mean, will there be employment opportunities for on-site managers or maintenance?
We have expanded the agency's personnel to cover the management of this property, in addition to service-related aspect positions as it moves forward operationally. So outside of construction, there will be folks that will be working there.
So I want to tag off of that. Is there vocational training or any kind of vocational services available for the residents who will be living there that could support the community?
Oh, yeah. That's part of permanent supportive housing, is to basically teach all different types of skills. We'll be doing on and off site training. For example, there'll be some cooking training, and there'll be classes on how to be a good tenant, and there'll be counseling that takes place there, opening up to the community any type of, I would suppose there'll probably be substance abuse, like AA, NA type meetings happening there as well.
Job training?
Did you say job training?
Yeah,
I think that's part of the reason why we're engaging all of our local service partners to see what they would like to use the space for, what they could find ideal for their... We have the huge community space and the kitchen, and so we're inviting that into the community to bring that into and be available for the residents.
When we put this into, remember this was outside, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was outside. So was it in another urban renewal, or was it not an area covered by...
It wasn't covered at all. It's just, it was adjacent to our boundaries.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and because of the high priority that the city council and the agency has put on affordable housing and the site just being a stone's throw away, that was part of the reason why there was the push to move it into the urban renewal, so that we could kind of help as... sort of what Jason was getting to is sometimes with these projects, there's, you get 90% of the way there and then there's this gap. And with a lot of the funds that the Housing Authority uses, they're on such a tight timeline to extend those funds or lose those funds or move it to another project, and they get these massive delays. So with having the urban renewal resources, when they get to that point, we can kind of help where need be so that they can keep those moving to kind of get that affordable housing, and then we get the benefit of getting that within our urban renewal area as well.
Okay, so when we acquired the property, does that mean that we get the tax income back into the urban renewal?
Well, if there was, it would, but it's...
But there's no income?
Well, there's no property tax right now because it's owned by the Salem Housing Authority. And
okay.
The Salem Housing Authority is a nonprofit.
Okay.
So
we don't get a return on the investment.
Yeah, we lose on that. Okay.
Yeah, but what we are getting is we're getting the affordable housing
right.
in the area. We're getting the services. We're getting, you know, that piece of it.
Is affordable housing part of the urban renewal criteria?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Mm-hmm.
So the other question that I have regarding this project has to do with what are the dollars that Salem Housing Authority received as committed from urban renewal?
So I will have to look to see exactly what the numbers worked out to be. We asked for... The problem is we had like three different things happening. So SHA came and said, you know, we need some additional funding to purchase the property. And then at the same time that we were doing that, there was the potential to have CDBG come in, and then that lowered the amount. So I think initially we thought it could have been up to $750, and it only ended up being $400,000 or $500,000 and some thousand, because if you remember, we took the savings from that and we were able to then move that over to CTEC. So we didn't spend as much as what we thought to fill the gap. And then we, in turn, we've now sold it back to SHA. So we haven't committed any funds, minus we did the property, you know, back a year, year and a half ago. What Jessica's referring to in terms of the gap is they may be coming in, but if they are, it's filling out a grant application. And most likely they would be filling out the grant application specific to the new affordable housing sort of grant funds that we've identified. So it's not as though they're going to come in and want something special that's not part of our budget. It would just be part of a grant ask.
Okay. So then it sounds like where we are today is the urban renewal funds, or sounds like they're about $400,000 into the project.
We've put about $450,000 into the project, give or take.
Okay.
I don't have the final, the numbers bounced a lot. That's all we've put in.
Okay.
And that's for the acquisition, because we did have savings.
Okay.
So we put in the smallest amount.
Is this July report, is that due to be discussed?
Yes.
Okay.
That's next on the agenda.
Good.
Cool. So I got one more question. So what's the other closest urban renewal line to that property?
There isn't.
Not anywhere near?
It'd probably be downtown.
Yeah, we don't have anything up north.
Okay. I was just thinking, why can't we get another urban renewal to...
It's already in the boundary. It's already part of our urban renewal area. So we can't take from another urban renewal when it's already in one.
You know, I think that area is really challenging too. Is this area in the city limits?
Mm-hmm.
But
there's portions that are.
Right. Well, you look in the, there was an article in the paper yesterday that talked about opportunity zones related to, and it was sort of the, not to go down a rabbit hole, but essentially that Lancaster had perceived, the perception was that it had been sort of left out of some of the city, of the funding opportunities, and it has. And I think one of the challenges is it's like you drive down Lancaster from Portland Road to, say, 22, and you've gone in and out of the city limits, I don't know, several times.
Yeah.
It's a tricky area conceivably an urban renewal zone for that area, if you can make it work, wouldn't be the worst idea. So I'm glad you brought that up. Thanks. Okay, so we do have other informational items on our agenda. Do we feel like we have this covered? Thank you very much. Appreciate the presentation. I think this is something that's going to bring good dividends and really fulfills the social aspect of what we're trying to do up here.
Well, and I know Jessica mentioned like touring, so I'm sure once it gets further in, if people are interested, we can always organize kind of a tour to see, you know, what does it look like and what are they doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
We did that out at Cornerstone. So if there's an interest by the board, you know, we'd be more than happy to sort of coordinate something for everyone to check out.
Superb. All right. So moving on, 6B, North Gateway Urban Renewal Area Grant Program update from Sarah.
Yeah, so this is, I don't have a ton. I just wanted to touch base. So you've got your kind of your standard report waiting for you. As for the funds for this fiscal year, as you recall, we didn't have any kind of on July 1st. So those got approved. Everything got approved on July the 7th. The following week is when we actually released everything, because we did add sort of those two subcategories of funding. We had to get some grant applications updated, websites updated, definitions updated, want to make sure everything was good to go. So all the funds are open for everyone. At this point, we haven't had sort of the rush that we've seen in the past. There's one grant application that's currently pending, which you'll see at the very bottom on the left-hand side from Jet Industry. They have another property on Silverton Road that they are looking to do some renovations to. There's other folks that have asked questions and inquired, but we don't have any actual applications in as of yet. So it's been kind of quiet. But I did just want to touch base so you guys could see kind of where we're at, and also to let you know whether or not we were seeing the mad rush that we, you know, that we had last year, or whether things were kind of slowing down and people were kind of taking their time a little bit more, which is sort of what we're seeing. But we'll kind of keep everybody apprised if that changes. So you can see here, you know, 217,000 is what would probably be being asked for. So if that went through, we'd still have 780 in the standard grant program that applies to everything, and then we have the 750 for development infrastructure and the 300 for affordable housing that have not been activated yet, in terms of no one's asked for them. So that's kind of where we are.
Questions?
I'm
curious.
I
always look to you. You always
comment.
Great. All right. Good questions and comments.
In answer to the question about how the funds are being used and the return, if you take a look at the bottom totals of grants that have been placed or are committed to $6.5 million. And the economic dollars committed by owners, builders, developers, et cetera, of just under $24 million. Number one, that's a great ratio. And number two, more importantly, it's making a real serious economic dent or positive consequence to the community. So the thing that is happening with the SRO project and Salem Housing and that kind of thing is just expanding their reach into the community with a product that is not readily available, and that's just really important. Just because of the fact that there's a whole area that we need to address. You asked the question, is it a good value? And in terms of, if I was a developer building apartment units, would I spend $100,000 a unit with single room occupancies? And the answer is probably not. When you complicate the conversation with prevailing wage and you are not doing the project to normal construction standards for simple multifamily development, but all of a sudden you're bringing the level up more to an institutional grade development, then that's where the cost difference really, really hits. So is it viable and done well? And the answer is the Salem Housing Authority is not an independent contractor that would do things the way that you would do. They are obligated to do things on a very different track with very different cost consequences.
Well, thanks for the context on
that.
Yeah.
And I would say that the match amount is actually higher than what we're seeing right here. I think we had a conversation as a group probably about a year ago when we were kind of evaluating our grant programs and things like that, that when people submit their applications, a lot of times, when they talk about their match amount, they'll just show the 50-50 match, even if their project ends up being significantly higher. And so one of the things that we put into place, I want to say starting fall of last year, was as the projects are completing, we're doing these closeout sort of documents that we're kind of requiring folks to do so that we can get a better understanding of what at the end of the day was the total cost of your project, because we do think a lot of these are a lot higher, which is going to show that we're having a much higher benefit to the community.
Sure.
So I think maybe over the next 18 months as we're doing these reports, we'll kind of see those numbers shift a little bit, hopefully, as projects close out, where maybe the match amount is not as higher than that 50-50. So that is just one thing to put out there to the group.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the question. Yeah, Dania. Is it Dania or Dania?
Dania.
Dania, sorry.
It's more of a comment than anything, and I see the money that we're putting into doing things for urban renewal. What would be a curiosity to me on these closed projects, and I don't know if there is a follow-up process, but to see what the benefit to the community is in some way after the fact. Do these businesses stay in place for 5 years? Do they turn around and sell? How is this money actually causing urban renewal in this area other than helping them buy equipment or support their own personal business? Do we have any kind of follow-up after things are closed?
We do and we don't. I mean, because you can only use urban renewal for certain types of things, it makes it a little... So, in general, you can only use urban renewal for the bricks and the mortar. Mm-hmm. So, even if a business were to completely renovate the space and then decide, you know what, we need a larger space, and then they bring in a new tenant, the thought process is being able to sell and not have just a vacant building sit
right.
is a benefit to the fact that we put that investment. So they can't take the investment with them. The only exception to that obviously would be sort of that equipment piece. However, the way that it's drafted, if you're trying to purchase equipment with Urban Renewal 1, it has to be a very large kind of, you know, I can't move that piece of equipment in and out myself. I can't put it on a dolly and bring it in. It's got to be crane lifted. It's things like that. And then there's a requirement that you have to stay in the URA for, I want to say, 5 years. And if not, you have to pay those funds back.
And we keep
people
accountable for
that. Yes, we actually have one individual that we've been working with that is having some issues and maybe moving out of the urban renewal area that received funding for equipment. And so they're working with Renee, who manages our grant program, on market value and what that payback would look like. So yes, they are, I mean, that is something that we track until they finish out their term requirement. So the thought is the money always stays even if the entity has to leave for whatever the reason. So we're still improving the sites and the buildings rather than you have dilapidated buildings that nobody wants to move into and then they leave and now we have another dilapidated building.
So I just have one, I saw you had your hand, but I have one tag onto this and I don't know if it has to do with the criteria of deciding which ones to approve. When I think of urban renewal, I think, of course, of the investment into the area to deal with the capital piece of things. But I'm also considering the idea of how is it benefiting the community from a vocational standpoint of opening up jobs.
We and track jobs.
Is that part of the criteria, is that if we get this money, we can get 3 more jobs or pay 3 more people?
It is not required. It is a goal to create more jobs. And then we do track how many jobs are created as part of these projects and or if they're permanent positions. So when we went through this a year ago, I did provide information to the board in terms of how many jobs, permanent jobs, we thought came out of these projects. At that point in time, we had thought there's about 180 jobs that had been created just as part of these particular projects. And those weren't construction related. These were permanent, ongoing. That number is higher. It's not something that everyone is required to provide us. We do have programs in place where, in order to access those funds, it is specifically tied to jobs created. So it's kind of one of those things where we're trying to track everything, but we're also at the mercy of if people want to share that information because it's not, we're not going out and counting and double checking. But we are tracking jobs, and it is a priority of the urban renewal area to do that.
I served on the Marion County Economic Development Advisory Board for a number of years, and one of the criteria for their grant funds was jobs creation. So if you were bringing in a piece of equipment, like several of the businesses on the list have done, the grant, part of the, one of the evaluation areas that was, you know, scored, was how many jobs are being created with these dollars. And that's something that might be considered to be added to.
I think it is on the application.
It is on the application.
But you don't have to have a set number. It's not a mandatory, but we do ask because once again, that helps tell the story.
Well, it was with Marion County. It was a specific graded item. So the advisory board members evaluated, there was a score sheet, and we evaluated each grant application with the score sheet, and the score sheet came up with a points average, and the points average rated the grant applications as far as who would be funded during that period, also tied to available dollars.
Okay.
The other thing that I want to comment on is if you go down this list of names, there is the majority of people here are either doing infrastructure development or in cases like Jet Industries, Watershed, there is Vagabond Brewing, etc. Those guys that are doing equipment are all established businesses here. Jet Industries, the Sheen family has been active in the community for 50 years. Watershed Red Steer and Salem Glove, and that's been here. Watershed has been here for in excess of 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And has developed and redeveloped and grown, et cetera, as the market has increased. And 2010 products is, I want to say, 25 years. So there is a good basis. If you take a look at the project that Jack Fox did, after he acquired the Mitsubishi plants, his project was infrastructure development. So he ended up with better quality storm drain lines to his property. So it was utility line development for that property, which makes not only a contribution to the area being serviced, but more importantly, expands the capacity of what could physically be in the buildings.
What ended up happening with that property?
He continues to lease it.
I guess what's in it? Do you know?
So
not to put you on the spot, but I know you're.
I don't have a list of the tenants, but I can tell you that he is 98% full.
Mm-hmm.
It's, they've done well.
Copy on that. Thank you.
Yeah, I guess my comment on that, talking to you, is like Nate was saying, a lot of these are people that have a lot of high-paying jobs, and the equipment they're getting is to help them continue having those jobs for those people here in the community. And then also, when it's the buildings, you see the big investment, plus it's tax revenue for the city, because now property that wasn't worth much is worth stuff, and now they have taxes.
Well, let me build on that. So when they do a big when they do a big investment in something like this, is the property subsequently reappraised?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
But the tax, I mean, the CTEC dollars that we invested, those don't generate any more property tax.
Well,
Salem Housing.
We've actually been collecting. So CTEC is actually kind of an anomaly in that, because it's actually owned by Mountain West, and
yep.
It's being leased by Salem Kaiser, with the deal that once all five phases of construction were done, then Mountain West would sell the facility to Salem Kaiser for $1. But the deal is, in that meantime, they've been paying property taxes. Mm-hmm. So we actually have been collecting tax increment, even though we've been giving them funding until they're 100% done with construction.
And at that point, the tax.
Then at that point, then they'll become a nonprofit.
Because it's owned by Salem Kaiser School District, right?
But because we're looking at 5 years worth, that's helped supplement a lot of the funds that we've actually been giving them. So they're kind of an anomaly in that. We don't typically have a developer that holds on to it for that long, but that was kind of part of the deal, and that's made it a lot easier for us to go back to the agency and ask for some additional help throughout the project, because they have been contributing into the URA. Nonprofits in general, it's always a little bit tougher to get that exception, and this URA is no different. Downtown's had that struggle West Salem, it's harder because they're not contributing. So then they have to meet some major goals that the city has set to show what is your benefit. You know, mm-hmm. we're going to give you funding that you're not contributing to. How are you contributing? Yeah. Right. So just like SHA project, there's a lot of ways that they're now going to be contributing. So it makes sense, you know, to kind of say, okay, we need some funding because you're going to be providing these assets to the community as a balance.
Other questions, comments? I just had one question, and this is actually more a couple quick ones. What's the trend in terms of downtown West Salem, other URAs? I mean, you know, I know we sort of had this sort of a gold rush out here to an extent.
We did, which is unusual.
You know, I mean, was this like a dynamic because we'd opened up that grant? I know part of it is just a product of the economy.
I think a lot of it was there were, from my understanding, and anyone else feel free, I know we have folks that have either applied or, you know, have been looking at it. I think the economy shifted and it started coming back, and I think people had projects on the back burner that they were looking to be able to do, and so it was a timing thing where everybody was kind of ready to pull the trigger at the same time. And so we sort of saw that gold rush, as you want to call. And I also think it's just a dynamic of the area. It's a timing thing. We haven't seen the same issue with West Salem and with downtown. However, there isn't an ebb and a flow with them as well. And they've had to go back and add more money to their programs maybe mm-hmm. half the year through. Mm-hmm. Or they've had projects come in that are substantially need more than what's in the grant program. And so they've had to pull funds from other sources. So yes, North Gateway was different in terms of our money only lasted, you know, a week both times that we put it in. That was highly unusual. But I think when you look at the scope of the year, it wasn't quite as unusual because we really were putting a lot of that same investment. It's just the difference here, too, I think, is we went through kind of a two-year period where we had a lot of people taking advantage of needing that full 300, where I think in downtown and in West Salem, they were doing much smaller projects, much smaller amounts of money, mm-hmm. and that makes a difference. The other caveat I would throw in with downtown is, you know, because they've been around since the 70s and their grant program has been around, a lot of those buildings have kind of gone through a first round of grant funds where they've had a facade update already done or they've had an interior renovation already done and then they get a new tenant and they want to do something different. And so that advisory board kind of took a different approach where they realized, you know, we've kind of given money out and now we're having people come back in for the same type of stuff. So they started kind of making their funds a little bit more restricted in terms of setting goals for each year. If you have a project and it meets one of those goals, you can get grant funding. But if you don't meet one of those goals, you can't. And those goals can change. We've sort of done that a little bit by saying we're going to have money for infrastructure and we're going to have money for housing and we're still going to keep our main carries everything grant program. So we've kind of tiptoed into that to see if that makes a difference. But that's sort of where the difference lies between the two. So when you look at the downtown numbers, they've sort of slowed down a little bit, but it's mostly just because one, so many of the buildings have had a lot of work done, and two, they're tying specifically to those different goals and objectives.
Yeah. Sorry, what was that?
If you take a look at this list, and if you take a look at Gateway, North Gateway is industrial by definition mm-hmm. and has virtually no retail commercial housing. Okay. If you take a look at what's on this list, virtually to a fault, there is no retail commercial or housing on this grant list.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is that that's where all the funds have gone. And West Salem and the downtown don't have any mm-hmm. industrial.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where all of these dollars is going, are going.
Yeah. Other questions? I sort of want to build on that. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I'll end.
Building on that thread, you know, I want to make sure we still are keeping our eyes on the Portland Road Action Plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be curious if this group would be interested in sort of a progress update on where, look at that plan, see what we've accomplished. I mean, I think if you drive up and down Portland Road, there's a lot of work to be done, but we're making a lot of progress. You know, I sort of rated on like my, so, you know, I mentioned I live right off Portland Road behind the Shell station, more or less. You know, I rated on like, well, what do my in-laws from Portland say when they roll in? You know, it's that curb appeal, it's the
retail development in front of the apartment complex, they're pushing dirt.
Yes,
that's
no, that
really changed the
That's Mr.
Sean. No, I think that's a very exciting development. And so I'd be interested in with the sort of, I guess, informal interest of the board, if you are, I kind of want to see where we're at with that, see what we're doing, see what we're not doing, and if we're, what we're not doing, if we're being intentional about what we're choosing not to do, if that makes sense, rather than sort of, you know, things slide by. I completely understand that. I think it'd be, we're a couple years in, I think it'd be a good time to take a look at that. Frank?
I'm been the chair of the Northgate Neighborhood Association. I'm concerned, I'm interested in what's going on in this area. And so I'd be interested in knowing if the funds are being used and what's going on with it. But, I was wondering about the welcome sign. Who would I talk to about getting?
That's Public Works. So they have funding to redo the welcome sign. I think they came to this group. Yeah. I think they came to the Neighborhood Association too. I think Mark Bechtel did. I checked in on that actually just a couple months ago. And because of the feedback they were getting, it made it a little more complicated. They, I think their thought was, we'll just put in a new sign, and they heard a lot of, well, we kind of like to keep what we have. So they were trying to find a COR that could do the work. It got delayed, honestly, by several months because Mark, who's in charge of that, is also heavily involved in what happened with the water situation last summer. So he kind of got pulled away. But they are moving ahead to try and get the new sign put in. But that's Mark Bechtel, Public Works.
I thought when they came here, we were the final vote. Remember,
yeah.
It was split, and they were like, what do you guys want to do? And I thought they were going to fix it here at 50-50. Isn't that what we decided?
Well, I don't know if that's what they're able to do. So that's what I've heard. Is he's trying to kind of figure out how they can get done what needs to be done. But they are working on it. They have the funding for it, and they're trying to. What it sounds like, it maybe they have to do a little bit of new and a little bit of old is what they're trying to figure out how to do it. But it was just a matter of, in terms of priorities, unfortunately, it was at the top, and then with all the water stuff that happened and staffing, it kind of fell. But now it's worked its way back up when I talked to him in May.
We had some problems in the group, and there was one person who wanted to keep the sign the way it was, and that person isn't there anymore, and the rest of the group wants to see something done with the sign. Right now, they just put up do not trespass signs around that because there were a lot of homeless people camping or living under the sign. One day I went by and I seen them throwing their drawers and their pants up on a sign to dry out when it was raining. So, but I don't think that's a good welcome to Salem sign to have that on the sign. But,
no. And I can check back in with Mark and then just shoot out an update to the group. Just
like
to see
that,
if there's any change. Last time I talked to him, I know
sure
he was
raging.
I have
his email address, but I would be happy to send him an email and ask him. But
yeah, I can do that. That is what I'm here for.
The one that used to be the Oregon motto, please visit, don't stay.
But yeah, last I knew he was working on getting a contractor to do all that work. So I will see where he's at,
yeah,
and then I can...
They could decide if they wanted to change it or keep it the same.
Yeah.
Right. Hazel wanted to keep it the same, and Hazel's...
Well, I will check in with Mark, and I will just send an update up to everybody. And then if you want more after that, we can always invite him to a meeting. So you just have to let me know.
Okay. Other questions, comments? So it's, yeah.
I just have, and this is a nitpicky thing here.
First of all,
this is a really good piece of information, and I like seeing it once in a while to kind of give me an idea of where things are. But my eyesight is shot as of last year. And if...
I will ask Renee if she can give me a larger PDF. That is.
Amen.
I can't edit it, but she can. So usually we do these quarterly. Is quarterly still good unless we see a significant change, I guess? If we see a massive change, obviously I'll let you know, but quarterly is when we typically hand these out. Is that still appropriate?
I think so.
Okay.
So what do we have on queue for September?
So we had talked about maybe being able to go every other month because we don't have as many action items. So I don't have anything on the queue.
Mm-hmm.
It's really up to the group if I don't have anyone that's pounding on the door. I mean, obviously there's always things we can bring up and we can update.
Yeah.
But I mean, whether you want to do that in September or whether you want to move and do that in October, that's up to the group.
So it sounded like there was enough interest in a progress update on the Portland Road Action Plan. Would September give you enough time to do that, or do we want to... Let me put it this way. If we waited till October, would it be more robust, or could you put that together in the time between now and September?
Honestly, it's really not going to take me that long because we do that as part of your budget process.
Okay.
So typically you see that when you look at your budget documents.
Mm-hmm.
The exception was this year only because obviously we had made the decision to hold off. But when you do your budget, so in February of every year, you get an update as to which projects have been completed, which ones are on hold, and then we pulled all of that out as part of the process to do the maximum indebtedness. And as we were looking at all those projects, we also did an update then. So it really isn't that much because it hasn't been that long since you've seen it. And really it's not as though we have so many things, like little projects going on. I mean, there's really not a big update to it. So I can have it if you would like at the September meeting. It's just whether or not you want to have go back to every other month or if you want to stick with an every other month schedule.
And as I want to make sure we have the time to really kind of sink our teeth into that a little bit. If we waited till October, then do you anticipate having action items that... Basically what I'm driving at is I'd like to devote a minimum of 30 minutes to it. And if we put that in October...
We can just say that's going to be October 30 minutes, and then after that, if we need to fill in, or we bump it and they go to November.
Okay.
Or if something major comes up between now and September, how about we can do this? We can keep the September meeting, see if anything starts percolating. If nothing percolates within the next couple of weeks where it looks like things are going to be packed, we can plan to go to October, and I can touch base with you.
How's that sound to everybody?
Yes.
And then we can make sure we're not trying to pack agendas.
Yeah,
I haven't heard of anything that's coming down the pipeline that would require...
No, definitely trying to balance the agenda. Yeah.
Definitely. So I'll touch base with you in about 2 weeks.
Okay.
And then we'll see what makes sense.
All right. Anything else for the good of the order? All right. We actually finished early. 8:57. We're adjourned. Thanks.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah.